Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. Yeah, I said that kind of funny, didn't I? Anyway, sometimes I say it right. Sometimes I draw it out. Jen, it's just, you know, it's one of those things. It's a Friday. I can say it differently sometimes.
That's right. You can TGIF it. But I do live for when you're just like, the podcast.
Yes. I like that, too. I'm going to put that in my voicemail. Podcast. Anyway, it is True Crime Time. It's Friday, and I am excited to just spend some time with Jen. Jen has found a great one. This is, like, right up my alley. It is not, you know, a locked room thing, and there's definitely not a milkman involved, but I really like these kind of things. I think the seedy world of tourism entertainment is very seedy, and there's
You're always talking about, you know, the yacht girls and the different people that get tangled up in entertainment aspects of tourism, and it doesn't always pan out good for them. And then on top of that, you know, we have this whole mysterious world of true crime, and it's linked to surveillance videos that, yeah, we have them and they pertain to the case, but they don't really explain what happened to the victim. You know, they're really of no use. So
yeah,
these stories, you know, will have an incredible tales of just surveillance that is so eerie, but not really useful.
I like eerie surveillance. It's like a Lisa Lamb.
You know what? That case just keeps coming up in indies because it is very Lisa Lamb-ish.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So the first one, I think we got a few. So the first one is Lars Mittank. We're just going to call him Lars. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Lars and his disappearance?
Yeah, Lars, he was 28 and he was German. And on June 30th, 2014, he decided that him and five friends were going to travel to Bulgaria, of all places, and to this beautiful Golden Sands resort. He had never been there before, but it was summer vacation. He's like, yeah, okay, let's go. During the trip, he had no appetite. He wouldn't eat with his friends. In fact, he was just ditching them frequently. And they thought that was weird. After getting into a fight and then suffering some type of ruptured eardrum and getting hit in the jaw, he decided that his friends should fly back home to Germany without him. And that's what they did. And then after that, he was never seen again after airport surveillance caught him running out of the airport.
Yeah, this is like which one did we do where the guy like ran out of the airport or the woman ran out of the airport, right? I mean, just all of a sudden, let's just
Annie
run out of the airport.
Was it not Borgerson? Borgensen or something
like
that?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, just I'm going to go to the airport and I'm just going to run out of there. It's kind of weird kind of thing. You know, but obviously the guy can't fly because he's got a ruptured eardrum. That would be excruciating. But you know, he's last seen him running out of this Bulgarian airport, scaling a barbed wire fence of all things, and then disappeared into the woods, never seen or heard from again. And, you know, and like you said, it's on surveillance. You see that, but great. We don't know what happened to him. We just know that he ran out of the airport. It's just the same with Borgerson or whatever, you know, just running out of the airport. Great. We saw that, but we don't know anything else. And, you know, I guess inside this resort is the Viva Club Hotel, where they checked in, and very touristy area known as the Bulgarian Riviera. I do not ever think of Bulgaria as having a Riviera. But you know, I mean,
no, the only time I ever, you know, have really, I don't know, I guess discussed Bulgaria or even heard about it recently is just, you know, in relation to things that Robert Maxwell was doing at the time. I don't think he ever described it as a Riviera, although it was a party place for him. And, you know, for these five guys, they were told to go there because this place supposedly has anything that a tourist could want. If you want narcotics, if you want sex, if you want just, you know, alcohol, whatever, there's a black market to get whatever. So these guys, they wanted to have a good time.
The only time I ever think about Bulgaria, and I'm surprised actually it hasn't come up with us, is because the KGB, and we know we always talk about KGB and their creativity when it comes to killing people, is they used to hire out the Bulgarian Secret Service to do all their hits when they were kind of with the Soviet Union and stuff. So I'm kind of surprised we've never brought it up or had that discussion. But I mean, the point, like you said, of going to this place was just to kind of drink and party, and you know, they can find anything there. But Lars, I mean, he seemed pretty normal, but he needed this vacation. He, you know, back home, he was working full time, helped his mother care for his ill father who had suffered a stroke. And the father, at least according to the articles and stuff, it seemed like he was incapacitated, needed lots of care. And So it seems like he, you know, pretty normal guy.
Yeah, he loved his family. He did. But he admitted that it was very stressful to see not only his mother suffer through watching his father basically waste away, but also to watch his father not be the man that, you know, he grew up watching. You know, he's no longer this strong patriarch of the family. You know, he's someone that's relying on Lars a lot. And so Lars, yes, he needed this vacation. And, you know, it's just sad that the things ended the way they did. But, you know, looking at it, you know, he had a reason that he needed to escape. You know, this guy, if anyone needed a break, it was him.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And, you know, they went to this bar, I guess, at the hotel to go watch a soccer match. And, you know, this is kind of one of those things where, you know, there's a bunch of people watching, and every bar table had small flags that represented the two competing teams. And Germany was one of the teams. And since Lars was German, he found, you know, a great pride in running around the bar and arranging everyone's tables so that way it kind of reflected the German flag. And, you know, this is the kind of thing when you're sitting in a bar and you're trying to watch something sports, if you're in there to watch sports or you're not really paying attention, you're more with your people or whatever. I mean, he found it amusing, but others didn't.
Of course not, because like you brought up, there are a lot of different types of people that visit Bulgaria. It is a mixing pot. It's a mixed culture, and you never know who you are going to walk up on when you start talking about spies and people that don't want to be bothered and things like that. He may have found trouble in one table in particular because they did not like their flags being, you know, messed with. And also they went on to get an altercation with him in which he thought they were linked to hitmen. So when you talk about, you know, like the Sunny Beach Mafia and just, you know, the KGB hiring up and things like that, I mean, yeah, it can be a thing, obviously.
So it's nobody's really for sure. They were either Bulgarians or Russians sitting at this table, and they didn't like it. And the next thing you know, huge fight. And this is where Lars, I guess, maybe ruptured his eardrum, got hit in the ear. And you would think that would get you kicked out of a bar. But apparently in Bulgaria, whatever, it's fine. You know,
well, it's a rough and tumble bar. You know, they want you to party hard. As long as you don't break their things, you're welcome to break each other's faces. I do believe that's okay. You know, as long as you're not, being louder than the game, you know, as long as you're not louder than the football match, it can continue.
And yeah, because I mean, it was crazy, right? I mean, just. Because
it was. They're swinging at him, supposedly. You know, there's five friends. So you get five different versions, but they're swinging at Lars, and he ducks a couple of times, but he misses. He misjudges ducking one time, and they crack him in the ear, and he's in a lot of pain. But they go on to be one of the last sets of friends who leave that bar. So it couldn't have been too bad or too intimidating, right? Or they would have left immediately.
Yeah. And so then they decided, like all Germans do after being at a bar, they go to McDonald's. And they go there for some food, and they're in line to order. And then Lars just abruptly says, "Hey, I'm not hungry," and walks away. And, you know, his friends noticed that he didn't eat much on the trip at all. You know, they were doing a lot of beach activities, swimming, clubbing. I mean, things that would probably make you hungry. But Lars would eat like a bowl of soup or a small plate of salad. You know, it's
why
kind of
is that? You know, no one's really tackled. Did he have some type of eating disorder, or did he have digestive problems? Why was he not participating in, you know, ingesting any type of food? You're on vacation. You know, that's when you're supposed to not only splurge, but I mean, at least eat more than you would at home.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that the friends would have said, oh, you know, he's never a big eater. The fact that they brought it up shows that he probably usually ate normally, and then all of a sudden he's not. And
I'm
while
like,
they were,
is this guy on Adderall? Is his stomach already full from something else? I mean, what's going on with him?
You know, the Adderall is not a bad idea, you know, because he was working full time and he was helping his mom take care of his dad and probably doing other things and probably needed to be up a lot and going. So Adderall's not a bad argument. But while they're eating their food, he disappeared. So they assumed, hey, he walked back to the resort. But once they got back to the room, he hadn't been there at all. And he didn't show up until the next morning. And the story he told his friends didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, some of the friends said that he claimed that he was followed by the men from the bar, and they beat him up. And then his story changed to the guys from the bar hired someone to beat him up. And those people were linked to some type of possible mob activity. So, you know, it's unclear, since his stories differ, if he received both the ruptured eardrum injury and then the jaw injury at the same time, or did one happen at the bar and then one happen later. You know, that's not cleared up.
No, it's not clear. And also the other thing that's kind of weird is we already knew he was beat up. Did they say that, oh, he walked in and he did look more beat up? You know, it's just kind of how many injuries did he have at the bar? And then how many did he get overnight? And did they just beat him up all night? You know,
it's a series of like stories to where, you know, you don't want to pick on the friends because you're not really sure how much they know, but it seems like it has to be to where they know a little bit more than they let on. You know, they're looking at him. You can tell if your friend suffered an injury, and if it was overnight, then it would have time to swell. So you would have some idea of when it happened. But the fact that this is five men in a bar plus Lars, and someone is able to isolate Lars from a crowd, you know, and pluck him out and then assault him, and the other guys don't do anything, you know, to me, it talks about something just being unspoken.
Yeah, you know, and he complained about the ear in his girlfriend, you know, in his ear to his girlfriend back home and his mother and the friends he was with. So that is, you know, something that everybody agrees on. And they all convinced him to see a doctor. And, you know, he's complaining about it. But then, you know, he agrees to go to the doctor, but he doesn't go right away.
See, that part bothers me. You're right. He didn't go right away. Instead, he decided to go party that night, you know, drink more alcohol and, you know, do things that would probably aggravate the condition. And then he finally caves in and sees a doctor, which he goes on to say that the doctor, you know, ridiculed him. He felt like he made fun of him. And the doctor would say that it was just a language barrier, that he wasn't poking fun at him. But from that point on, you know, Lars was even more paranoid.
Yeah, you know, he sees this doctor. The doctor says, hey, you need some surgery. And Lars goes, I'm not getting any surgery in Bulgaria. And says, you know, I'll just make it to Germany. And then, but the doctor was right about, you know, that flying would make the condition worse and to give the ear in a few days to become less inflamed. And he prescribed 500 milligrams of Cefprazil, which is kind of a broad spectrum antibiotic to prevent infection. So, you know, I guess it's just to kind of, you know, get him along until he could get home. And I guess he left the doctor's office, went to a pharmacy to fill it, but the pharmacy didn't have that much or something like that.
Well, so, I think the doctor wrote it for like a pack of 20 or something. I don't know if they come in blister packs or if they just come loose. But anyways, there was a quantity of like 20 or more. They only had 10 tablets. So instead of loaning him a couple of tablets and telling him to come back later, they turned him away completely. And then he goes to a second pharmacy, and I assume that they had what he needed because he went on to fill that prescription. And how we know that is because he tells an additional doctor later on that he's been taking the pills.
Yeah, but there were some stories that claimed that he never filled them or, you know, anything like that. But I guess there was a private Correct. Investigator hired by the family, and they pretty much determined that he did, in fact, fill the prescription. And then I guess, you know, this is a crazy thing. It's just one sentence, but to me it's odd. So he texts his mother and asks her what type of drug Cefprazil was. All you got to do is Google it.
Instead of him using Google, you know, he's asking his mom these questions. She said he was very paranoid, and she Googled and told him it's just a benign antibiotic. It is a broad spectrum. It shouldn't do anything to you as long as you don't drink on it. You know, she was at least aware of the fact that, yes, he was out partying. And one of the warnings on it is just don't mix with alcohol, you know, because you can have side effects from any drug. But if you drink alcohol, those side effects can be much broader. You know, they could be significantly worse.
Yeah. And, you know, she said he was talking crazy and needed to come home right away. And she wanted to ask him more questions about the fight at the bar and other things about his trip, but she never got the opportunity. You know, I sometimes think, well, maybe he got a concussion, you know, or something that really just jiggled his brain. Because
I thought that too, because, you know, the doctor would not have been able to see the concussion, right? They didn't do any type of CT scan, you know, of his head or his brain or anything like that. The guy is just looking at his ear and prescribing antibiotics for his ear. But then I think about the fact that, you know, he wasn't eating you know, prior to getting beat up. And, you know, he's acting kind of off from the minute that he got there. So, I mean, was this something that was just building up?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because of the fact that if he had abruptly stopped eating after he got punched, then that would make sense. But you're right. I mean, he wasn't eating prior to that, but he was drinking a lot of alcohol. And also, if he was taking Adderall, we don't know how that would mix with Cefprazil, and then combine that with the alcohol. And we don't know how many tablets he took, if any of them. We know he filled the prescription, but we don't know if he actually took any of them.
Right, because he was so paranoid about them. It's hard to determine, because nowhere in the reports, and the mom hasn't mentioned anything about, you know, did they ever get physical custody of the bottle? Did they look in the bottle and see, you know, how many tablets or capsules were missing? You know, did it ever come to that point? And, you know, to me, that would be really important.
Yeah, you know, and like we said, you know, the friends said, you know, he's off. I mean, these are guys that you're going on a trip with. These are not just random strangers. So he knows these people. And, you know, the part about not eating with them and then walking away from them, that's not really, it's a country he'd never been to. And, you know, yes, it's a resort, so it kind of gives you a, you know, semblance of safety. But at the same time, you're walking away from the people that can make it familiar and make it less paranoid. And
yeah, it's real curious where he disappeared to after they went to McDonald's. You know, how did he know where to go, and where did he disappear all those hours? He kept telling his friends, you know, since I'm a power plant worker, my hearing is really important to me, and I need to do everything I can to preserve it. And, you know, he was really paranoid about his ear.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess, yeah. I mean,
so if
you
can't hear out of your ear, why would you keep walking away from your friends? Because at that point, you kind of need them to listen out for you, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so on July 7th, everybody checks out of the Viva Club Hotel. And Lars went to the airport with his friends, said, hey, just go to Germany without me, which they did. And, you know, he said, I'll be fine on my own. And they last saw him in, quote, a good, relaxed mood. I mean, this is the other thing. Isn't that going to make him more paranoid to not be with his friends? And were there not any friends, one of them, that could stay with him a few days?
It seems like a couple of them opted to stay back, and he was persistent in telling them, no, go home. I'll stay back. I'm grown. I'll be fine. Trust me. I'll be right behind you. And, you know, they were like, okay, you know, if you don't want us, we're going to leave. And that's what happened. And, you know, it always seems like they're like, well, I left him in a great mood. He was fine. He was relaxed. You know, but was he?
Yeah. And, you know, this, again, him being persistent and you guys go ahead. Did he want to be alone some more? Just like when he was ditching them, you know, for dinners and stuff. It's kind of, I want to be alone. Maybe, you know, that was his way of coping with being busy all the time and being around people. All of a sudden, he just wanted some alone time. And he had cash on him, but he was running low. And he had checked out of the resort, and he got a taxi and asked the driver where he could stay. And the driver said, hey, you know, this is what they call high seas, but, you know, peak season kind of thing. And it was slim picking, and all of the hotels were booked. So Lars was looking for something near the airport, and the taxi driver recommended a hotel called Color. Unusual name for a hotel.
Yeah, Hotel Color. I mean, if you look it up, the locals will talk about how it has a sketchy reputation. It's not exactly the most crime-rich area of Bulgaria, but it's not a place that tourists should exactly be. I mean, there's drugs, there's prostitution, there is, you know, talk of that type of shady behavior. And then you have, you know, it's kind of like it's mob-controlled, basically. So Lars, it wasn't a good place for him, especially in his state of paranoia.
Yeah, because when he checked in, the hotel took a copy of his ID and credit card. And this instantly made him more paranoid, but they're always going to do that at a hotel. So they probably did that when he checked into the Golden Sands.
Yeah, I read that, I knew that you and I were going to agree on that. That's just typical. You know, they want to know who's staying in their rooms, and they make a credit card copy, you know, even if it's those carbon copies. That's just what they do. And he just became instantly paranoid. He started thinking that he needed to cancel his credit cards because they did that.
And when he reached his room, he calls his mom and was whispering to her about the walls being paper thin and how she should cancel the credit card and that people were after him. And she said, look, you know, you're out of town. You're out of the country. The credit card is your lifeline. And he pressured her to cancel it and then asked her to wire him $500 via Western Union. part of me, okay, we haven't got to the disappearance yet, but obviously if you're going to disappear, you don't want to use your credit card because then everybody can find you and trace you. But if you had some cash, then, I mean, $500 is not going to get you very far. But, you know, it's...
No, not at all. And it's questionable because he knows that his mother is getting ready to book him a flight back home. So she's going to put that on either his credit card or hers. That's a paper trail. They're going to get a copy of his ID. They have to know what the passenger manifest is. So he's not hiding from anyone. Him asking for $500 cash, I mean, was he contemplating bailing on his family, or was he needing cash for reasons of, I don't know, maybe obtaining something that was already making him paranoid? I mean, he had a credit card, right? It's something he could not swipe for. So he wants his mom to send him cash.
So you got, you know, it could be prostitution. It could be drugs. It could be gambling, I suppose. Any of those three where he needs the cash, where the credit card's not going to do him any good. Maybe he had maxed out his credit card gambling and you wanted it canceled so he could get a new one or something and say, hey, you know, somebody took my credit card and those charges weren't mine. I mean, there's a lot of different things. And the mom's saying, here, I'm going to book you a flight. If you can't take the flight, I'm going to book you a bus. And she just wanted him home. And, you know, we have CCTV footage from the hotel, you know, very Elisa Lam-ish. And, you know, from the moment he arrives, he's acting strange and you see him pacing the hallways, just pacing them, you know, and looking out windows and then hiding in the elevator and peering out for behind the doors. And no one else was seen in the hallway. I mean, I could take those two sentences and it would be the Elisa Lam case.
It would. So what is making all of these people so paranoid? I mean, their behavior is it is just uncanny how similar it is. I mean, yeah. I don't believe this guy was playing the elevator game. He seems to think that someone was following him or chasing him, but the CCTV footage doesn't show anyone after him.
Yeah, I don't think he would know how to play the elevator game.
Yeah.
But Elisa did. And, you know, so July 8th at 1 o'clock in the morning, he leaves the hotel at 1 o'clock in the morning. And then he comes back later to get his bags before heading to the airport. And no one knows where he went at 1 a.m. But he called his mom around that time to tell her that four men were following him. And he was whispering and that he was hiding in a high place and fearful of making a move that could cause him to fall and die. You know.
Ew, that sounds very much like that last case we covered with Ray. Where they want to scale, you know, to the top of a building. And, you know, they may not be feeling very mentally well and... Ooh, that's the last place that Lars needed to be.
Definitely the last place. And it also makes me think, you know, if you're leaving, you're bailing on the hotel at 1 o'clock in the morning, then it's some kind of vice. It's, I know you're paranoid, but perhaps it's buying drugs or whatever. And then it is increasing that paranoia. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, he appears on the airport surveillance. Now, we don't know if he took a nap or anything prior to the 1 a.m. departure from the hotel. So you also could be talking about somebody who's been awake for a long time, you know, like Ray, you know, who's been awake and awake and awake.
Right. And which research has shown us that when they have sleep deprivation, it makes them more prone to these psychotic episodes.
Yeah. And he appears on the airport surveillance at 5 o'clock in the morning, tells his mom, hey, I'm at the terminal. And she said, what you need to do is you need to see an on-site doctor before boarding the flight. I didn't know they had airport doctors that you could go see.
That is the most common comment, and I didn't either, but I have never been to Bulgaria. So apparently they have these little mini clinics inside.
Yeah, I would have never, you know, I'll go see the doctor at the airport. And he mentioned not having any money on him, which is odd because when he checked in, he told her he still had cash. So how did he go broke within a few hours?
You know? Between 1 and 5 a.m., suddenly he's broke. He has remained paranoid. So if he had taken something, you know, when he landed, this was a week-long trip, it would have worn off by the time he was to this point. So he must have been either consistently taking something or, you know, he was flipping out on his own.
Or, you know, like I said, I mean, he was doing some kind of vice where it was taking all his cash, something that, you know, wasn't, you know, he couldn't use a credit card really. But he makes it to the terminal and he's about to go see the doctor. And that was the last conversation that Lars had with his mom. And she hung up fearing what he was running from. So the airport, you know, again, thanks to the cameras and stuff, you know, Lars was seen walking into the clinic, waiting briefly to see a doctor named Dr. Costa. And Lars was kind of, you know, taking his hands and wringing them and acting overly anxious. And outside investigators claim that the doctor's story changed. But again, Bulgarian authorities say, no, it was the language barrier and translation.
Yeah, to the best of my understanding, through translating the documents, you know, from their side, it just seems like the doctor advised Lars that it was not in his best interest to fly because it was going to hurt like hell, but he could fly if he maybe took the pain medication the doctor was offering and then signed some type of liability disclaimer stating that, yes, I understand that I've been medically diagnosed not to fly, but I'm going to go against doctor's orders, you know, so that they wouldn't be liable for him if his ear, you know, blew up or he died or whatever. And then there's like a second theory that the doctor could have possibly told him that if you fly, you know, this could kill you. You're going to die.
Yeah. And, you know, Lars asked the doctor questions about the medication he was already taking. So then that kind of shows that maybe he was taking it. And if Lars was taking it, he wasn't convinced it was helping him. But it's only been like a day and a half or something like that, right? So the doctor offered pain medication, but Lars didn't want to take any more pills. And the doctor said that there was construction happening in and around his office. And apparently a construction worker entered the exam room, and then Lars started screaming that, I don't want to die here. I need to get out of here. You know, that is extreme paranoia.
It is, because who did he believe that construction worker was? Not that I agree that a construction worker should be coming into an exam room at any point in time. You know, that's unnerving.
Yeah.
Someone's kind of violating your privacy and coming in on you like that. But when he saw that guy's face, I don't know who he thought he was. But he leapt to his feet, dropped his bags, and, I mean, out the door he went, out the clinic, out the airport doors. I mean, he was just basically almost knocking people down to get out the doors.
Yeah, you know, he ran across the street, over this razor wire fence, into the woods, and he left his bags, his passport, his ID, his wallet, his credit card, and his phone behind. And the video of Lars running from the airport is one of the most watched true crime videos. You know, I would put it on not as many as Elisa. She's got the world record. But, you know, it's very, very well viewed.
Yeah, it ranks up there with, like, Missy Bevers, Jennifer Kessie, you know, just where we have surveillance. And, again, it just does not help us further solve the case.
No, and the Bulgarian authorities, they searched the woods, the surrounding area. They brought in dogs. There was no sign of him. Okay, that part right there seems kind of odd to me, because we know that he went into the woods because there's the video. And he's left all of his stuff behind, including his bags, so the dogs would have sniffed that. These must have been some very poorly trained dogs, or they didn't really try hard or something.
Or it was a country. Like, if we think back to Aruba when Natalie Holloway went missing, a country that is protecting their gold mine of tourism. It is one thing to have a disappearance. It's a different thing to come upon someone's body, and then people start speculating, well, how did he die? Was it a murder? Did he kill himself? That looks worse than having someone that you could say, well, he walked off on his own.
Yeah. I mean, when the case went cold, his mom hired a private investigator. And these woods, these are not, you know, some kind of dark forest kind of thing. People live there in the woods. And there's people who make a living off of, like, foraging in the woods and collecting things to resell in town, you know, where it's, you know, mushrooms or berries and all this kind of stuff. There's homes nearby. There's a busy highway. You know, it's not like he just kind of went into the woods and disappeared and we'll never find his body or something like that.
No, not at all. And also, if he had made it to the highway, he could have hitched a ride. And then he could have went to another town. He could have went to, you know, the border between Bulgaria and, you know, one of the other countries. And despite putting up a lot of missing posters in town, and none of the locals had seen, you know, this tall, blonde guy. And, I mean, he's really blonde. He would stand out, in my opinion, in Bulgaria.
Yeah. And the private investigator discovered that, hey, drugs were likely involved in Lars's disappearance. Yeah, we could kind of figure that one out. And he was able to make some underworld connections in the area and gather that much information, but it's still unclear what drugs Lars may have taken. And here's the other thing. Okay, let's say in Germany he was using some kind of drug, whether it's Adderall. Let's say it's Adderall, just straight up Adderall, just, you know, a prescription kind of drug. And he goes to Bulgaria and he, you know, doesn't have any Adderall with him. And he finds a drug dealer and says, hey, do you have any Adderall? And the drug dealer's like, well, I don't have Adderall, but I got something that's similar.
Yeah, he's like, well, I mean, I have Adipex, or, you know, I had this, that, or the other, and he's not used to taking that. You know, what if he had a reaction to that? Or what if he was withdrawing from something?
Yeah, that's true, too. Or you just any kind of drug that he was taking, and he's looking for a substitute, and the Bulgarians might have been cutting it with something, something that made him paranoid, whatever. And he wasn't used to their version of whatever drug he was hooked on. And, you know, and obviously if you're mixing the booze with that, then you're just, you know, in trouble. And it doesn't even, and then if you're mixing it with the antibiotic, then it's even more so.
Yeah, and that's where I think the friends come in. They would have known a little bit more than they let on about, you know, what were they taking? You know, what were they partying with? What was Lars's vice? I feel like five people who are sharing a room with you would know what you're into.
Yeah, they would, because obviously they also knew him back in Germany because they're going on vacation together. And perhaps these friends were also doing drugs, but maybe they were doing a different kind of drug. Maybe they didn't want to admit that they were doing drugs and then have everybody looking at them. The whole question about whether or not he was taking the antibiotics, you know, nobody seems to know. Well, did he have the pill bottle with him? Was it in the hotel room? Were there any left? I mean, that should be pretty easy to clear up.
Yeah, even him just filling them from the get-go, all of that should not be a mystery. I mean, that's easily something that's trackable by, you know, like, I guess their version of the DEA. It would still have a prescription number just like America. They know whether or not he picked that up. And, you know, the PI just surmises that Lars had some type of mental breakdown and it was possibly due to something that he ingested, you know, be it something prescribed or something unprescribed. And it's also unclear to the PI if Lars entered the country with, you know, an underlying medical condition or maybe a mental condition, and then it was aggravated by, you know, the rest of these circumstances, because again, he took care of his father, he was stressed,
and he worked a lot. And, you know, and while the private investigator is kind of conducting surveillance of Hotel Color, he observed prostitution. That's a shocker. And he doesn't know how that would play into Lars's behavior. I don't know how, you know, I don't think that that would, you know, cause him to be paranoid. Oh, there's prostitutes here. I better be, you know, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. But we said, instead of locking himself in his room, which you would do if you're paranoid, I'm going to stay in my room until my flight leaves, right?
Yeah,
until I'm ready to go to the airport.
Yeah, put your head down and, you know, let all that stuff blow over and then, you know, exit when it's time for you to leave. No one would be any wiser. But no, he's running up and down the hallways, playing in the elevators. He's making his presence known.
Yeah, and then, you know, it makes you look unwell. And like you said a million times, once the police think that you're unwell, then, hey, you know, he killed himself somewhere. But the mother claims he never did drugs or had mental health illness. I
love moms, but we know how that is. You know, they love their children and they want you to, they don't want to give you a reason not to look for them or not to feel for them.
Yeah. And, you know, luckily she didn't say, well, you know, he did suffer from mental health issues, because then they would have closed the case immediately. But the drugs, you know, maybe she didn't know that, you know, he did drugs. I mean, I know he lived at home and he's always helping to take care, so she probably would know. But, you know, he was acting so bizarrely. Just, and I don't know if he normally got into fights. That's another thing. You know, the friends could say, well, yeah, whenever we go to a bar, we always fight or something like that. And, you know, but he was acting out of character prior to the bar fight, and something was developing before he received the head or ear trauma. And that just probably made it feel worse. You know, everything going on inside his head.
Yeah, well, based on his mom saying, you know, he doesn't use drugs, then the PI decided he was going to look into a different aspect. You know, it was going to be far-fetched, but he's still going to look into it. Was Lars made to be a drug mule? You know, was he hired up by, you know, some type of mob or some type of hitman or something like that? Because the guy said, well, while he disappeared, while we were at McDonald's, you know, was he kidnapped? Was he made to do something that he didn't want to do? And by muling, they mean people that will kidnap you and make you swallow bags of drugs. And then you will carry them across a border sometimes those bags of drugs can leak. And then if mm-hmm. you're being slowly poisoned by whatever drug you're carrying, that could explain why you're either, you know, overdosing or you're acting erratic.
Every episode of Locked Up Abroad, same way.
That's true.
You know, it is, you know, they swallow the drugs and, you know, and they pay for the great vacation. Maybe he was smuggling drugs from Germany to Bulgaria. And that's why they got the trip. And maybe the friends don't want to say that, you know.
No, they probably don't want to be involved in that, especially if they were, you know, initially purchasing any type of substances from these people that went on to do bad things to their friend. And then also you have the authorities who are, you know, local to the region. They don't want to talk about that because it hurts tourism.
Yeah, they want people to know that they can come there for a good time, but not actually say that you can get anything there. And they definitely don't want anybody to think that there's mobsters who jump people in bars, you know?
Yeah, that's the bad thing. Come here and, you know, have a good time, but we don't want to tell you that you can come here and get two black eyes and a ruptured eardrum.
Yeah, and, you know, over the years, there have been reported sightings of Lars. Anytime a blonde male matching the correct age and description is discovered, I mean, they believe it's Lars. One man they discovered living homeless in the Bulgarian woods was a dead ringer for Lars, but he turned out to be another man who ran away from his life because it was too much. So, you know, is there another Lars in the Bulgarian woods somewhere? The actual Lars? Maybe. You know, he would have gone back to this stressful life, right? Of helping his mother care for his father, working full time, probably felt like he was just like a hamster, you know, on the wheel, just going around and around and around.
Yeah, and that can be a breaking point for people. And the majority of the people they found hiding out in the woods had ran from just that, those type of life activities that they were just tired of doing. And, you know, Lars' family, they want to believe that he has amnesia and he's still out there somewhere waiting to be discovered.
Yeah, you know, I know that your opinion is that he, you know, purchased probably bad drugs or had a bad trip or something and eventually died. I'll go along with that. I just, or, you know, somebody found him and killed him. And I think, you know, if the police found the bones, they probably hide them. They probably wouldn't tell the parent, you know.
No, because maybe a disappearance sounds voluntary and it just sounds better to the press than someone who was possibly mugged. And then, you know, you can speculate wildly how someone died. And if you start talking about murder, tourists are going to skip you and go somewhere else. And then also it'll just bring in more reporters and they're going to look into the underbelly of these operations that, you know, people don't want you in their business.
Yeah, I'm going to go with, I mean, I like your drug meals thing. I think maybe something was leaking, but I just think that he didn't bring any drugs from Germany because he didn't want to get busted crossing the border because he probably watched Locked Up Abroad, got some drugs in Bulgaria that he thought were going to be similar to the ones he took in Germany. They weren't. They made him paranoid. They made him crazy. They made him not eat and eventually drove him mad.
Yeah, I'm on board with that theory.
And I'm not saying that he's dead. He might very well be alive. He might be in some kind of mental hospital in some Eastern European country, you know?
It could be. It just depends on how far he made it. You know, if he hits to ride and he ended up somewhere else in another town, maybe they don't know about the flyers. Maybe they don't know what a Lars is. And, you know, he could be one of those just random John Does out there.
Yeah,
it's not implausible. So, I mean, the family should continue to look into it.
And, you know, there's adventure and there's risk to traveling out of the country. And, you know, each country is going to protect its own interest. And they're going to show a reluctance to investigate crimes against foreigners. You know, the high profile cases like a Natalie Holloway or whatever, they get press. And, you know, from disappearances to murders, I mean, these are mysteries that can kind of haunt us like Lars. And one of the things that, and there was kind of one in the news this week too, but I'm not talking about that one, but this model, you know, the yacht girl life, I mean, it can seem appealing to outsiders, you know, because if you go on Instagram, you know, the women are all frolicking on beaches and they're, you know, next to like $200,000 cars and they're in first class and Emirates and stuff like that. And they're on yachts and stuff. And, you know, they're not posting the photos of them being beat up or, you know, handled or forced to perform or anything like that. So what happens, though, when these models say no? or they decide they don't want to participate in this tourism entertainment. So we're going to look at a couple of cases, and why don't you tell us the first one, and that way you can pronounce her name.
Yeah, Magdalena Zuk. She was a Polish model and beautician, only 27. On April 29th of 2017, she supposedly jumped to her death from a hospital window, and it was after she was tied to the bed for acting erratic, and she asked to be untied, and supposedly she leapt out the window after that.
Yeah, you know, I'm always suspicious of anybody leaping out of a window, although I will say that when I did the Christina Onassis or whatever, you know, that's the bell person, she actually did jump out of the window. So it does happen. And, you know, Anderson Cooper's brother jumped out of the window. But Magdalena had traveled to this Egyptian beach resort town of Marsalam, and she died only 3 days after arriving there. 3 days. And again, much like Lars, the circumstances surrounding her death have always been suspicious because there's a lot of video footage of her movements up until her death. And
yeah, these videos, they leave more questions than answer because it's how they are obtained. You know, the people taking these videos and the fact that they took so many of them is what is so questionable. You know, why was she really sent to Egypt alone? And who are these men around her that are preying on her and videoing her? And, you know, a lot of people just bring up the aspect of the sex trafficking trap.
Yeah. I mean, Egypt, I mean, I understand she was supposed to go with her boyfriend. Okay. So you're this Polish model and you say, and a lot of people go to Egyptian beach resort towns. That's fine, especially in Europe. And you say, this would be a great place. We'll get out of Poland. We'll go to the beach. Hey, fantastic. Love it. Oh, I can't make it. Well, I'm still going to go.
Because women statistically should not travel to Egypt by themselves. It's just not a good idea. You should go in a group. You should go with another guy. It's just one of those places where you are going to get followed. I mean, if you just read the stories online, there are forums dedicated to it, blogs dedicated to it. But Magdalena, she bought these tickets to Egypt last minute, supposedly just hours before they were supposed to board. And she had this boyfriend named Marcus. The two had not been together very long. He was a barber. And he was like, look, I can't take off work. I can't make this work. My passport's about to expire. I can't go. But she decides to go without him, having never traveled out of the country alone, ever.
Yeah, this is the most bizarre thing. Because she's supposed to go with Marcus, like you said. And they're supposedly deep in love or something, even though they hadn't been together for very long. She borrows over $1,000 from her parents to buy the airline tickets. Doesn't tell Marcus until essentially, hey, you know, here we go. You got 8 hours to get ready. And he said that she was kind of manic for the impulse purchase. You know, my guess is somebody contacted her on Instagram, said, hey, you know, if you pay over, you know, to come see us or whatever, we'll pay you a bunch of money. And she goes, well, I don't want to go alone, so I'll take Marcus. But then Marcus couldn't go. And so she goes, I'm going to go anyway. And, you know, she didn't want to lose the $1,000. I guess Marcus tried to sell his ticket on Facebook, but was unsuccessful. I don't know how that was kind of possible because, you know, there wasn't much time. It was last minute. You know, you're not going to get anybody to buy the ticket.
Right.
Like
That's what makes it so curious. And I do think you're onto something because a lot of these, Instagram models will be, they're contacted and said, hey, you know, even last minute, can you come and model? And we know that that is pretty much a code word for something else. You know,
yeah.
Can you come to our country, entertain us? And, you know, perhaps she was like, yeah, sure. And she anticipated taking a guy with her for safety. And, you know, he bails on her for whatever reason. And so she told him, you know, I'm going to board the flight. I'm really nervous about it, but you know what I'll do? I'll find an elderly couple and I'll stick really close to them and they'll serve as my protection throughout the trip.
But see, again, that doesn't make any sense really at all because, okay, there's going to be an elderly couple on the plane and then I'm just going to stay with them next to them the whole time I'm there. That makes no sense whatsoever.
No, because there's no guarantee there would be an elderly couple on your flight. And what if they're not going to the same destination as you? What if they live there, you know, in the country they're traveling to and they're not going to any type of resort? Then what are you going to do?
Yeah. What if they don't want you hanging around with them?
That's true.
So, you know, I mean, it's 4 hours before flight time, and he's still posting on Facebook trying to sell his ticket. Oh, yeah, so you got 4 hours notice before the flight. Does anybody want to buy a ticket to Egypt or something? And so Magda gets on the flight, but there's no elderly people on the flight. The flight was mostly men, and she grew more anxious, and passengers at her gate saw her go into an airport store, buy some wine, and have a bunch of drinks.
Yeah, she's like, pause. I need to get off for a minute. Yes. I need to go get some wine, and then I'll be back to my seat. And that's what she did. She had a couple drinks, boarded. The passenger said that she was cordial or just super chatty. And she was really focused on the fact that, you know, my boyfriend's supposed to be with me, but he's not. And she just kept repeating that. And she seemed very nervous and out of her element.
Yeah. And once the flight lands in Egypt, she takes a taxi, checks into the Three Corners Equinox Beach Resort. And then after check-in, her family and her friends had a difficult time contacting her. They got these weird text messages from her that said, "Where are you? Come to me." It was really concerning because the text didn't come from Magda's phone. They came from the phone of a travel agent named Mahmoud. And he had met her at check-in, and since she was Polish, he had her believe he needed to follow her around and translate for her.
Yeah, see, that it makes me wonder why she was traveling, who she anticipated on meeting, and it's another reason why females should not travel to that country alone, because you look, she ends up with this handler, and he follows her around the entire time, and where did her phone go? Because these texts are coming from the travel agent's phone, they're growing stranger and stranger in nature, and then the family starts receiving photos of Magda, and she's sick in bed. She's wearing only a robe, you know, just very scantily clad. Yet this guy's in the room with her, and she's covering her face as if she's almost ashamed.
Yeah, and another photo shows her passed out face down on the floor, and her family panicked. But Marcus seemed, you know, really kind of cool, confident about kind of this thing. And once Magda finally reaches out to Marcus via FaceTime, apparently she looked terrified. She looked dazed. And Marcus said, "Hey, I'm sending one of my friends, this guy friend, to go to Egypt to get you." But Magda's not actually holding the phone during this conversation. The travel agent is.
Yeah, that bothered me that she's not allowed to touch the phone and she's mumbling incoherently. And Marcus is, he's saying, you know, "Baby, honey, tell me what happened. You can tell me. It's okay." And he's just trying to coax it out of her. But his words to me just did not sound genuine, and she's telling him, "This hotel has tricks. I can't talk. I can't talk about this." But she's also motioning, trying to get him to follow along. She's showing like an act, and it kind of seems like she's acting out a sexual act with her hands as to what happened. And then she goes on to talk about maybe someone raping her or putting something in her drink.
Yeah, and I think that she's just, you know, drugged up, obviously. And, you know, she acts out the thing with her hands, and I guess she wanted Marcus to catch on to it, but he either ignored her on it or didn't catch it. And the phone call lasted 13 minutes and ended with the travel agent telling Magda, "You're only supposed to talk of hospital," before turning the phone away from her and addressing Marcus. And the agent tells Marcus, "This is a waste of time." And he goes on to cut Marcus down, and it sounds like he calls his captain, in quotes, at some point. And their interaction is bizarre for two strangers who don't know each other.
Yeah, it's hard to tell what type of situation this is in because, you know, while people act differently in traumatic situations, it seems like the boyfriend would be like, "Who the hell are you guys? Why are you holding her? Why can't she have her own phone? Where is her phone?" But no, he's having a conversation with this guy, and it's almost like we're watching people that have buyer's remorse. You know, this travel agent's like, "Oh, she's a waste of my time." And, you know, you're hearing a guy who's just really unhappy with the arrangement. The accents are very thick, so it's very hard for me to figure out everything that they're saying, but I made out at least that much.
Yeah, and you know, maybe Marcus had sold her and then decided, you know, and said, you know,
I'm worried that that's what was going on. I mean, just complete opinion. Just if you listen to it, I mean, everything just kind of slants that way.
Yeah, because the family said, you know, she didn't have any mental health issues, but resort guests said that she took off her shirt, ran around the hotel bare breasted while telling people her boyfriend was supposed to be there with her, bring that up again. and she would throw herself on the floor and refuse to get up. And the hotel staff, they're like, okay. So, you know, they're trying to comfort her. They're trying to coax her back to her room, or so they say. But the odd thing is how they video all of her outbursts and send them to the family from the travel agent's phone. You know?
Yeah, this guy never leaves Magda's side. And while he is a very good looking, very well dressed, I mean, maybe they thought that, you know, he was very professional in their opinion and deserved to be with her. But at the end of the day, you know, he's a stranger. And he's not someone that should be, you know, in her room or privy to private information. You know, if she's having a medical episode or something like that, he shouldn't be up in her medical records or, you know, anything to do with that. And then when he is questioned about it, he gets real sketchy with investigators, and then locals start talking about the rumors of him being responsible for dosing females and then possibly assaulting them.
Yeah, and raping them. And he denied it, deleted his social media account, and fled town, right? And Magda's transported to a hospital, but they weren't equipped to treat, you know, mental illness or psychotic issues. And the doctor at the hospital claimed Magda wouldn't get out of the car and entered the hospital, but video shows Magda calmly walking into the hospital on her own 2 feet. And she was evaluated, I guess, to the best of their ability, sent back to the hotel. And then the travel agent checks her out of the hotel the next day and takes her to the airport. So
we're back at the airport again. And
always at an airport.
And when every time this girl goes to the airport, her behavior becomes like more erratic. And that's exactly what happened. She got there, she acted out, and they banned her from flying.
Yeah, because she looked drunk. And, you know, she's screaming, she's taking off her clothes. She was transported back to the hospital, and it was a private hospital. And she was taken there for the night while a friend traveled from Poland to take her home. And CCTV footage from the hospital shows Magda in a hallway with two people in scrubs who look like they are actually hospital staff, alongside two men in plain clothes. And one of the men is blocking kind of the hallway camera from a full view of Magda's meltdown. And she's lying on the floor, and she's, like, flailing around. And then I guess what, a nurse reached for her, and she kind of lashes out at one of the men in plain clothes.
Yeah, she tries to attack one of the men in plain clothes who's dressed very nice, who is thought to be this travel agent, because, again, he follows her everywhere. He's the one that is supposedly blocking the camera, and she really has it out for whoever that guy is. You know, she wants to get a piece of him, and in trying to reach for him, her hands find the strings of blinds, and it kind of pulls the blinds up on the window. And I think the nurse in the back of her head thought, oh, no, I don't. She doesn't need to see a window. But I mean, it kind of makes you question, like, how does she know the window's a thing? Do you often have people go out the window? I mean, so she closes them back really quick, and people are like, well, were they shielding outsiders from seeing something, you know, untoward happening to Magda? But
yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's not sinister. Maybe it's because they didn't want her to go out the window.
I don't know. It seems to me like they didn't want anybody to see it. And it's two men in plain clothes. And, you know, you said one of them's maybe the travel agent. And
well, he has to be, because he won't leave her. So one of them has to be. And the thing I want to ask you is, like, what's your opinion on this? So, right, he accompanies her to the airport. He's supposed to be her handler, make sure that she gets on the flight. How did she end up drunk or back on a substance again if he's not providing it to her? Because I assume as her chaperone, he would tell her, no, Magda, we're not doing any of that. You're going to get on the flight. You're not going to ingest anything. But she, you know, she's crazy again.
I think that he over-medicated her at some point, and she's on just a crazy, crazy trip. And, you know, he probably medicated her some more to try and get her to calm down maybe at some point, and it just made her worse. Which is why you go back to the conversation with Mark. It's like, this just isn't worth it kind of thing. Because she's just too much to handle in this kind of situation. And, you know, when I first thought about the men in the plain clothes, I wasn't convinced that it was the guy. What I really had in my head was, okay, she got to the airport and she got to a point where she couldn't fly, but did they make that decision after security? And was he allowed to go through, like, security? Because this isn't that long ago. And, you know, and then she got crazy, and then they took her to the hospital, and perhaps the people in the plainclothes are cops, like detectives or something like that. That was kind of my original thought. So even if it's one of them is a travel agent, then one of them could be a cop, or a detective or something, or maybe a hospital administrator, perhaps.
Yeah, the second person could be a hospital administration or perhaps a hospital security. But it just seems like this travel agent is not going to allow her to be out of his sight because he needs to ensure that she doesn't say too much when she was on the phone with Marcus. You know, he told her only stick to talking about the hospital.
And she was taken to a private room and tied to the hospital bed with linens, of all things. And the staff claimed, this is the staff, claims that she made several attempts to jump out the window. Was it open? And despite that knowledge, and despite staff reporting that Magda was given sedatives, she was able to coerce the nurse somehow to untie her, to allow her to use the restroom. It's a hospital. They couldn't bring like a, you know, a bedpan.
Well,
and
see, that's funny that you bring that up because the nurse went on to say that she picked up what is a bedpan and tried to hit her with it. So I assumed that they were going to leave her there and allow her to use the bedpan. But no, she supposedly picks it up. How she did that after she was sedated is beyond me. And then she tries to attack the nurse and, you know, somehow she gets the window open and then she goes out the window.
And she jumps out of it's only a second story window, by the way, folks. This is not 15 floors up. You know, second story window, lands on a concrete stairwell below. And had injuries to the left side of her body as if she had been unconscious during the fall and smashed into the concrete in the fetal position. She hadn't tried to land on her feet, you know, which is kind of odd. If you think back to the last, you know, week or whatever, feet first, right? Running start.
Yeah, it seems like that guy got a running start and it was his idea and, you know, he expected to stick it, but this girl, you know, her injuries, they do bother me. I'm not saying it's not impossible to fall out of a window and only injure your left side, but I mean, come on, fetal position, injuries on left side. They spoke about sedating her heavily. How was she on her feet?
Yeah, you know, and the problem was she suffered critical internal and external injuries, but the hospital, I don't even know why we're calling it a hospital, because they couldn't treat mental illness. They lacked experience in treating traumatic injuries. They wasted time trying to patch her up instead of immediately rushing her to a larger trauma center, which was about 180 miles away. And they could have life-flighted her in a helicopter, but they sent her by ambulance. And even with that, all of that terrible stuff, she died after getting to that hospital.
The internal injuries killed her. You know, she had like a punctured lung and, you know, she was drowning in her own blood. You know, she needed help immediately, and why they didn't life flight her is really questionable. You know, did they want her to perish?
Yeah, they did, because if she got on the helicopter, she would have been fine, because they would have been there two hours quicker, you know, 2.5 hours quicker. So I think that would have, you know, but the problem with the life flight is then this travel agent's probably not getting on the helicopter with her. And he's not going to be able to, you know, to keep her from saying her story. And that's kind of why I think, you know, the hospital also.
I think you're onto something because, so, you know, everything points to them, you know, not wanting to separate the travel agent / translator from her. And, you know, the life flight would not have allowed him on. And so she, you know, gets transported by ambulance. It ensures that she perishes because, you know, she's suffering, and I don't like when people suffer. And then the cause of death, of course, was blunt force trauma, but the manner was suicide.
No, you know, this one, no.
An insult to injury, the hospital called it a normal incident.
Yeah, you know, and then we got to figure out, did she have the psychotic break all by herself, or was she drugged? She was drugged for sure. And I'm assuming that she was drugged whenever she met this guy. He probably carried it with him. And, you know, as soon as he had the chance, he gave it to her in her drink or something, which is why the hotel has tricks. And, you know, he never left her side. He was in and out of her, you know, hotel room and hospital room. It was so strange. And then you think, okay, it couldn't get any more strange, but it actually could.
Yeah, because Magda's family has the knowledge to realize they need to start retracing her steps to figure out what happened to her, and they pull her cell phone activity. One of the pings reflects that after she checked into the resort, the phone is pinging in the middle of the ocean. Seeing how she didn't drown, she went on to live and experience all these erratic episodes. Was she on a yacht?
Yeah, probably. She was probably on a yacht, and that's probably why her family couldn't reach her at first, because there's probably no cell phone reception at all, and it gets tossed into the water, probably by Mr. Travel Agent Guy.
And it was probably her main reason, right, for going on this trip to begin with, because she was likely invited to come to this country and, you know, participate in some type of entertainment.
Yeah, you know, and this is why she came back from the boat, to the resort, acting psychotic, taking off her clothes, lying on the floor, in her bed, covering her face. Something happened. She was probably drugged. Egyptian authorities say, oh, it was an error in phone service. She was never on the ocean.
Yeah, they played that off. They're like, no, it's an error. Never happened. And, you know, Magda's family and the citizens of Poland, they felt the death that was more than an accident and wasn't investigated properly. And the BBC was really bold, and they went on to print that Magda's death was linked to human trafficking. And, you know, that's just a reluctant topic that the Egyptian authorities do not want to investigate. You know, they don't want to talk about why the travel agent constantly videoed Magda, you know, why she was there. Everything is about preserving and protecting tourism.
Yeah. And also preserving, you know, probably the people that are paying to have people like Magda brought into the country. Okay. We got one more. Carolina, I'll say the name this time. I'm not going to say it wrong. Carolina Kozaruska. Anyway, Carolina.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Yeah, she's going to be Carolina. So, okay, and, so she's kind of linked to Magda's case. You know, they started looking at her case. Again, she was a woman who died of suicide, supposedly. She was also a very popular Polish model.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And the thing about it is, and it was, you know, the friends digging in and stuff. She, you know, made a great living, drove expensive cars, modeled for high-end labels, and it looked glamorous from the outside, but insiders kind of knew the dark side. Because Carolina had dated at least two men who beat her and pimped her out for sex. And she also had a fiance, which is kind of curious, considering the last person to see her alive was one of the ex-boyfriends. And, you know, the BBC had called Magda's case human trafficking, and Carolina's death pretty much also had possible ties to human trafficking. You know, the term, you know, model for yachts is mentioned, obviously, in online forums. I talk about it. I don't know if I coined the term yachting, but, you know, it is now the lexicon. Yachting is basically escorting.
Okay, and Inti told you first.
And
so look, somebody got a hold of some videotapes, and they decided that these cases were just too similar to discount, and apparently they started a petition asking the Polish Republic to take special care in reopening both cases. And, you know, because both cases have these reputation of bad characters and misconduct among authorities. And if you look at the allegations, I mean, it's human trafficking. It's covering up for, you know, some type of mob ring. And the videos are just really suspicious, because some of the videos go on to show that these people ran in a circle together.
Yeah. So it's January 16th, 2016. She's on top of the world. It's her birthday, and she invites her friends to join her at the Mercury Hotel in Poland. And, you know, she had recently signed a new modeling contract. She had purchased a house. She had arranged for her Mercedes to be shipped overseas. Her fiance is described as like a really successful businessman from Britain. And after her birthday party, the guests left, but she decides, hey, I'm going to stick around for a few more days. And for whatever reason, her ex-boyfriend joins her at the hotel. And they kind of had a disagreement. And this is where we got the cameras again. We always have the cameras. And he's seen on hotel surveillance storming out of the hotel. It doesn't really seem to have bothered Carolina at first. You know, that he left or they had a fight, right?
No, because she's seen leaving the room after him, and she's going to take her small dog for a walk. And she wasn't outside long before she came back into the hotel looking like she'd forgotten something. You know, like she left something behind, and then she entered her sleeping room and was never seen again on CCTV.
She probably forgot a dog bag. And she goes into her hotel room, never seen on the CCTV again, like you said. And the hotel has a very strange policy of shutting off CCTV at a certain time every night. And they don't turn it back on until the sun comes up. Okay.
Well, that's quite the operation, you know. It's convenient.
It is convenient for the hotel guests who have company. And what happened inside of Carolina's room and who possibly entered is unknown. Because just after midnight, guests phoned the front desk complaining of a dog barking. And when security walked the hallway, the dog was silent. So they didn't investigate any further. They should have.
Yes, they should have. They should have knocked on her door and, you know, said, hey, is everything okay in there? Or, you know, made sure that the dog was not left unoccupied. Because that's not only not going to smell good, but she's going to start barking again. But when Carolina failed to check out the next morning, the maids came in and it made the gruesome discovery of finding Carolina fully clothed in a ski suit, but slumped over in the bathtub, which was not half full of water, but there was, you know, at least an inch of water. And there was a flat iron cord around her neck.
Yeah, I mean, that's not something that the maids wanted to see when they walked into the room at all. And why are you wearing a full ski suit? I mean, I don't get that at all. I mean, it's January. Okay. And it was determined that the more slumped over she became, the more she was strangled by her own weight. And some investigators view it as a staged suicide, where a person is incapacitated and then left in a position where you can't get out. You're going to die, you know, because there was no signs of struggle.
Yeah, and another weird thing was that more than one cell phone was found submerged in the small amount of tub water, and the water rendered the phones useless. They couldn't pull any information off of them. So the medical examiner felt that, you know, she agreed that another person could possibly be involved, but you've got this Polish prosecution office that is also handling Magnus' case. And they said, no, it's a suicide. There's just no more to it.
Which is such garbage. And, you know, Carolina's hotel room was a wreck. Drugs were found at the scene. No fingerprints, though. No DNA. No CSI from the shower. And so because they were calling it a suicide, nothing was examined, nothing preserved. And then the flat iron cord, for whatever reason, that Carolina was hung with was put in a bag and sent to the mortuary for the family to pick up. Here's the thing that killed your daughter. Would you like that? Sure, I'd love it. But before the family even had a chance to pick up the belongings, supposedly the cord disappeared.
Yeah, that's creepy. I've never heard of them sending the rope or anything like that to the family. And, you know, while they took no type of CSI at all, they didn't have any problem releasing her tox report and saying that, you know, yes, she had high levels of drugs in her system, you know, making it sound like that it was her idea to do all of this. And there's no witnesses to what happened, of course, because there's no surveillance. And the only way in her room is the front door entrance and then the balcony. But the police report reflects that the balcony door was open.
Yeah, when they arrived. And remember, this is January in Poland, okay? So you have this balcony door open. And it also appeared that the room may have been tossed by someone who stole expensive items. And the dog that she loved and kept in the room with her was beaten, possibly kicked. I mean, it recovered from its injuries. Right there. Prosecutor, you think she was kicking and beating her dog and then committed suicide? Come on. I mean...
Yeah, the dog now lives with her mother, and she said she would never hurt that dog. That was her baby.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, did Carolina's ex show back up to the hotel to continue fighting with her? Was there a type of fight about her no longer wanting to be pimped out because, you know, she wanted to settle down? She's got this boyfriend and everything. Why did the ex-boyfriend show up at the room? You know,
yeah, I mean, I looked at it like, was it a robbery gone wrong? Did someone see a really rich model and then decide that, you know, once she got back to her room, they're going to come into her balcony and rob her? Possibly. But then you start looking at everything that the boyfriend had done previous to her death. And, you know, it kind of just makes him look more suspicious. You know, why was he in her room to begin with? Like, what did they have in common at that point?
Yeah. And Carolina's mom said, hey, this ex once sneaked into Carolina's room via Carolina's home balcony. And, I mean, he was the last person to see her alive after the fight. after a fight. And she kept pictures of the bruises she received from his beatings. You know, so this was not a pleasant guy. And the dog obviously was beaten or kicked, so, you know. And he also was stopped while trying to enter the country of Germany just after Carolina's death. So, okay, she died. I'm going to go, boom, going to flee to Germany. And, you know, Poland and Germany, and they share borders, so you just drive across really quickly.
Without implying guilt, I mean, collectively, it does look suspicious. It does.
Yeah, and so there's the second ex-boyfriend based in London who helped kind of jumpstart her career, and she initially owed a debt to him for her success. And, you know, I mean, this was a woman who kept photos and videos of, you know, she kept insurance. And, you know, apparently there's videos of her describing what the ex made her do to become famous, and she mentions threats and beatings and prostitution. And the ex told her if she started trouble with him, he would release X-rated videos of her to the family and to the press, and he threatened to ruin her career. And then this ex was discovered hanged in a hotel room shortly after her death. You know, this is all kinds of bad people. Very bad people.
It makes you wonder, did someone find the tapes and then, you know, go on to punish him for what he did to her, or did he punish himself?
What, you know, what was kind of discovered by these friends is the craziest thing that ties these two together, Magda and Carolina. Someone in Magdalena or Carolina's circle, right, came across old videos that show Magda's boyfriend, Marcus, partying in clubs with the people in Carolina's circle. Interesting. You know, this club manager thought it was common knowledge that the people knew each other. And the same person who discovered the club video said they're also in possession of a video that shows Marcus, because he's a barber, right? Hairdresser, cutting Carolina's hair. Mm.
Yeah, so if all of these people know each other, and two women that they knew went on to suffer mysterious deaths that were ruled suicides, I mean, that is problematic. They need to talk to these specific characters more in depth.
Yeah, I mean, the Polish prosecutors say, oh, no, no, they're not tied together. They are tied together. And, you know, and I'll let them get away with saying they're not tied together, but you will never, ever in a million years convince me that that woman, Carolina, kicked and beat her dog. And then, you know, went and committed suicide in the bathtub in her ski suit. That never happened. You know,
no, because while it's cliche to say she had everything going for her, she really did. She had just penned a brand new modeling contract. She bought a house. She was getting her life in order. Everything suggests that she was settling, and just perhaps maybe someone was not happy that she was settling. I don't think that woman would have killed herself.
No, and this is my opinion only, but my opinion is that the ex wanted her to do something for him, perhaps some prostitution, perhaps some drug dealing, whatever. But she has this boyfriend in Britain, you know, a fiance that she's going to marry. She's super happy. And she tells the ex-boyfriend no. The ex-boyfriend, who has a history of beating her and sneaking in through balconies, comes in through the balcony in January and then beats her senseless and kills her. You know,
a lot of staging in the room. She's really embarrassed about the fact that X-rated tapes could be released. So she cares about her reputation. Does that sound like someone that would leave a whole, you know, plethora of drugs laid out on tables? Highly unlikely.
No.
It sounds like that someone would come and embarrass her and leave drugs out.
And, you know, she was in the ski suit. You know, I don't remember what they said that she was wearing when she went to go walk the dog. Was it the ski suit?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah. So, you know, she's in the ski suit. She forgets something, probably, I'm guessing, like a doggy bag to pick up poop, goes back up to the room to get it. He's already snuck in. She's not getting out again.
Yeah. And even though the cell phones were rendered, physically useless, they need to get, the digital footprints of who she called and who she last spoke to, because maybe she got a text or something that was unnerving that sent her back to the room. There's some reason why they felt that the cell phones needed to be destroyed. And that, too, in my opinion, points to it not being a suicide.
I love these. I love them. And I love that there was the circle with the Magda and everything. And I can't wait to see what we find for next Friday.
We'll get into something.
We will. So everybody have a great weekend. Jen, have a great weekend, and we will talk later.
Yes, you as well. Thank you. Good night.
Bye.